This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio, and another Town Hall Academy. We are so glad you continue to be here and support this and come here for episodic education for the automotive repair industry. And we have rebranded our aftermarket radio network. It's gone. It is now called the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And the real exciting thing is you're going to start seeing, and if you haven't already seen, we have our own app. Yes, it's our own listening app. We have out there right now a YouTube video as to how it works. You are going to love it. It's kind of like an ultimate playlist. It's your own app, all the shows on the network. We're not going to clutter your mind with any junk, or we're not going to algorithm you to death. It's all about the quality stuff that we do here. Thank you so much to our great sponsors, Napa Trax, Today's Class, Kukui, and Pit Crew Loyalty. Hey, for over 30 years, Napa Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Ready to optimize with Today's Class? Boy, listen to an episode we did with David Boies. Great program. Roll out a training plan for your automotive shop. In just 5 minutes daily, boost knowledge, retention, and improve team performance. Start seeing results today. Join your peers at todaysclass.com. Shop owners, stop juggling multiple marketing tools. Kukui's integrated platform, they deliver 4 times better website conversions, automated follow-up, and real-time ROI tracking. Get industry-leading customer support with Kukui. That's KUKUI.com. You're probably tired of chasing new customers who never return. We understand. Pit Crew Loyalty ends the one-and-done cycle, turning first visits into lasting, reliable revenue. On the web at PitCrewLoyalty.com. Hey, let me introduce my panel to you. Welcome, panel.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
Yes, as you all know, we are talking about preventing turnover. Oh, can't wait to hear this one. Nicole Benikoff, Empower Automotive, Traverse City, Michigan. Hello, Nicole.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here. Brad Updegraff, Dave's Ultimate, Austin, Texas, 6 locations. How you doing, Brad?
Actually 7 now.
You see, I took a nap, and this is what happens.
I'm doing fantastic. I love the talking point, honestly. The concept of today is going to be great.
Glad to hear it. Appreciate that. Craig Noel, Sun Automotive, Springfield, Oregon. 4 or 5 now? It's 5, I think, right?
5, and then we have, it's coming. You're napping again. I'm taking Brad's lead on this. You know, I'm sorry.
Write it down, Carl.
You know, I am so happy being semi-retired and continuing to grow, Craig, huh?
Yes, right.
And that's the truth, by the way. How did you recruit your wife to run the business while you did nothing? I don't understand. How does that work?
Well, I had a couple of interesting health episodes. However, it's going great. I'm actually officially semi-retired, but yet here we go with, I'm good. I can spend more time doing that.
He's the Wizard of Oz. He's pulling the levers behind the scenes.
That's it.
All right, look, I am hot on this topic. We have been so ingrained in the deep end of the pool on ghosting and recruiting and retention. And this one's about preventing turnover. And I believe our panel, and I've seen their talking points, they're good stuff. They're going to have a great conversation, is very powerful and things we need to think about. But Brad, I want to go to you first. It starts, you say, with the interview process.
Completely. With that in mind, you know, there's a lot of mindsets for how you interview and a lot of things that can factor into a quality interview. I have colleagues that do 3-hour-long interviews with, and they want to invite their family members in. So just make sure they fully understand the picture, and the dichotomy of their relationship and how well they would be a fit for the culture of the company. And while I don't have 3 hours to interview, I really admire that kind of mindset behind it.
What about the interview, Nicole? Are people willing to sit down and give you a really decent interview?
I mean, I think the serious people are the ones that are, they know your culture and they want to be part of it. So it's like you attract to you who wants to be with you as well.
That is such a powerful statement. I mean, you'll know in the first 10 minutes if they want in or not.
That's for sure.
Did you ever cut an interview short?
Yeah, I have.
Definitely.
last year we were interviewing a lot, and it was just, I was like, this is okay. You know, so I looked at my interviewing partner, my service manager, and we're just like, wrap it up. Move on. Like, let's not waste anybody's time.
Yeah. What's the signal?
Code blue.
If I wiggle my eyebrows twice.
Let's go.
It's interesting, you know, Nicole's spot on, because there is something to remember as we embark on this new generation of potential staff, is that we are looking for the reason not to hire versus the reason to hire. And when you think about it from that perspective, and we are trying to focus on culture hires for sure, it's not only a culture hire for us, it's a culture hire for them. And to uncover that does take quite a while, because what you don't want to do now, in my opinion, my humble little opinion, is you don't want the wrong hire for the obvious reasons we all know, everything from training to dealing with all of the different issues. So the time that it takes to find that right person is extremely important. And my advice would be, take that time.
Preventing turnover, when you think about the processes that you have to invoke in your business to make it run right and give the greatest client experience possible, do people, will they come in and want to do it the way that they've always done it at the previous shop and somehow buck a little bit of the processes that they're supposed to learn in your place?
I would say absolutely. In fact, that's actually one of the questions we try to elaborate on the most during the interview process, is to try to figure out the type of employee experience we're hiring and what they're going to bring. In some cases, they bring some great talent that you actually want to be able to tap into, instead of just being, you know, so specifically we do it this way, but it's a great time to find out that information.
The buy-in is important. Like, and some of that you just don't know. Like, you try to match that up before the person starts working for you, but we try to focus on one of our values, which is having a growth mindset. And so the idea that we don't know everything, but we're willing to learn from each other. So that's important. If somebody has that attitude that they've got it all figured out, it's just, that's probably not a good sign.
Yeah.
We'll be just chatting with some independents today about processes and having them locked down. And I've seen a piece of software called Trainual that puts everything together and holds people accountable for having read it and know it. And when you get an individual who's, say, seasoned, gung-ho, I want in, to tell them, look, our processes and systems are reviewed occasionally. And, you know, as you're working into ours, when it's time to revisit any particular policy, you're going to be on the team to be there. We may be able to learn some really good stuff from you, but in the meantime, this is how we all do it.
That's very true.
Does that work? Can you get the vibe that you're going to be able to hire someone that will stick around?
I would say absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think is really important is the time spent to try to uncover what they're going to contribute is so important, because what you want is collaboration. And you're going to have to distinguish between somebody who isn't going to be the time clock puncher, of course, but you want somebody who's going to contribute, because at the end of the day, this is like football. Look, you can have Tom Brady, but unless you have a front line and you've got people contributing to the overall goal and the collaboration of the movement of the company, it's not going to work. I would say now versus, say, 10, even 15 years ago, it's so dramatically changed, because people now really want to be part of something, and they're going to try to uncover. The ones you want are the ones who are going to try to uncover what's going to be, quote unquote, in it for them, or what can they be a part of. So that changes the strategy of how we talk to people during that hiring process and along the way.
That's very true.
Yeah.
One of the things that Nicole brought is a talking point. And by the way, Nicole, I love all of your talking points to my panel, but that not all turnover is bad. And that's the humbleness of everybody agrees. You're interviewing someone, Nicole, and you don't double wink the eyebrows that we're going to end. Maybe this person is good, but you're always on the edge of your seat as this individual comes in that says, raise your hand if you've made a bad hire.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And so that is actually part of business life. Yes,
definitely. I would hope that, you know, through these processes, we are taking takeaways from any experience that didn't last and trying to figure out how to not duplicate that same scenario.
I would piggyback on what Brad said in that, you know, our job at the end of the day, and here's how I feel about it. I don't want to put words in other people's mouths, but at the end of the day, if you've got to let somebody go, I want to be able to put my head in the pillow and know we did every single thing that we could, right? From the educational part, training part, expectation part. And I always say, I kind of morph a saying, which is like, you could lead a horse to water. My saying is, yeah, you may not be able to make him drink, but you want to be able to make him look himself in the reflection of the water, right? Which is, look, as long as we both can part ways and understand that it's just not a good fit. And sometimes that doesn't work. Don't get me wrong, but at least, you know, the gray hair is there for a reason. I don't want any more gray hair. So we want to make sure those decisions, whether it's a good fire because of a bad hire, at least you've gone through the process to make sure that you've given everybody an ample opportunity to grow within your company. And I think that's what sets you apart as well, because I've had more people say, you know what? It's my own dang fault. I'm the one that screwed it up. It's a good company to work for. And when you have people who have been terminated because of that, then say good things about it, you've done the right thing. It's something to think about.
Craig's absolutely right with that. In fact, we've actually had several rehires along the way that simply just learned their lessons from having the hard, you know, walk away from our company and trying their greener pasture that they thought they had elsewhere, and realizing that, you know, really we had it figured out.
Yeah, I agree with both of your viewpoint on, you know, sometimes you hire people and you're not in the same place. Mm-hmm. You figure out, like, you know, we're like, for instance, I'm in a growth mode and we're pushing, you know. And maybe that person's like, just isn't for me. You know, I just am not, this is not where I want to be in my life. And so it's interesting, because recently any hire that hasn't worked out, I feel like it's been a mutual decision on both of our parts. Like, we're mutually, we have an understanding that we're just not going in the same direction. We respect each other, love each other, but you know what? Let's part ways. I just think it can be a healthy process. And for your team too, they can see that, and they see that we can still have respect, but we're not going in the same direction. And that really motivates them too, to feel involved when they know that somebody who's not on the team fully is going to leave.
Absolutely.
Like sitting down with somebody and say, come on in my office. Hey, look, it's not working. Do you agree?
Oh, without a doubt. However, if you take that from the five previous steps and conversations relative to, you know, getting to that final decision, oh, they need to know the writing's on the wall, right?
Exactly.
Literally, there shouldn't be a surprise at either end.
Clearly, right? Overall, yeah. They're going to have a case where something's going to have to happen. However, you're correct. Now, what's interesting to the retention part is that when you're showing absolute grace and motivation, and you're trying to guide and coach, that also really kind of goes to the current staff. And they really appreciate the fact that they see the investment in the individual. It wasn't a shotgun knee-jerk reaction to get rid of a certain, you know, person. But when they see that you're trying to invest in those people, so they see that they're going to get the same investment, then they're all rowing in the same direction and really appreciate the fact that, hey, at the end of the day, it is culture over production.
That's absolutely right.
For sure.
I'm thinking here a little further down the line when it comes to preventing turnover, and that is that we are getting ready to scale. Craig, you're buying. Okay. Brad, think about what you're doing. Nicole, you decide to step up into some big financial goals for the team. So you're in front of them. In the back of your minds, are you thinking about trying to prevent turnover from the extra responsibility on the team?
Absolutely.
That's probably the number one thing I don't sleep with in regard to my business, is my expectations. I mean, I want to provide for them. I want them to have, you know, my team to have things. I want my family to have things, right? But it's like that balance between what you're expecting and what they can take, and if that's what they want. You know, that's just, it's always changing.
That's very true. It does help to try to get your team as motivated for your growth as you are. And that's obviously easier to say when you're a business owner. But the reality is, the more people you can get in that same oxygen as you and thinking the same way, it just enables them to kind of take on that extra power and really show you what they're capable of in those times. So
I would probably add to both of what Nicole and Brad said, in that for me, when I'm expanding or we're making a change or we're talking about the future, we talk about retention, Carm. We talk about what we want to do. You know, before, I think it used to be, here comes Craig. Oh, we're making a change. This is what we're going to do. No longer is that the case. Why? Because I have found that the accumulative effect of all the brains and the input regarding what can happen for the future of the company is very powerful. So when you bring them along the journey and have an open ear, that's just a small part of making them feel like they are a part of something.
Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. Napa Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. And having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Hey, Carm here, suggesting you discover a smarter way to train your entire automotive team. Experience powerful, bite-sized training sessions accessible from any device in just 5 minutes daily. It's perfect for technicians, advisors, and managers alike. Today's class prepares your shop for sustained success by reinforcing crucial knowledge. Plus, add a competitive edge with our leaderboard to make learning fun and rewarding for everyone. For effective training that delivers, turn to todaysclass.com. Shop owners, we know you are overwhelmed with a flood of missed calls, empty bays, and disconnected marketing tools. Kukui has spent over a decade building one integrated platform for auto repair shops, one login, one dashboard, and mobile-first websites that convert 4 times industry average, smart, innovative CRM with automated follow-up, 24/7 online booking, and real-time ROI tracking. With 900-plus years of combined team experience, we fuel the growth of 2,200-plus shops and have influenced $3 billion in revenue. Stop working harder. Start working smarter. Get industry-leading customer support and book a demo with Kukui. That's KUKUI.com. You know, most shop owners feel trapped, spending on ads while half their first-time customers never come back. It's frustrating. It's exhausting, and it's not your fault. The industry average is 54%, one and dones. We understand how discouraging that can be. Well, Pit Crew Loyalty changes the story. Our clients cut that rate by up to 38%, raising lifetime value by more than 50%. Loyalty members visit nearly 3 times more often, creating predictable revenue without extra ad spend. Pit Crew Loyalty, where customers stay and shops thrive. On the web at pitcrewloyalty.com. Two words, the collective.
That's right.
You said that, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And I love that part because that's ultimate team. Now, they may not get every one of their wishes or contributions ingrained or leveled up, but at least they know they have a say.
Without, absolutely. And sometimes those says, that input, oh, I didn't even think of that, right? Yeah. Nicole's like, writing that down. That's a great idea, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to run with that one. Absolutely.
Very insightful.
Everything I'm hearing is all about culture.
Oh, yeah.
And that's that enigma, that untouchable thing that we know that we have to keep working on. And it's, quote, the behavior of the company. It's how you behave, they behave. It's the goals you set that they conform into, they behave into those, your purpose. And is that preventing turnover, which is our panel's topic? It seems to me that if the culture isn't right, you're spinning like a top in turnover because you're hiring bad culture because you're not looking for good culture to fit.
That's correct. Yeah. I would say, you know, and I'm not trying to kind of take over the conversation here, but because I'm so passionate about this because of so if we talk about the collective input and we talk about their being part of something, we are talking about making sure that somebody is being heard. We are making it personal. And so if we think about long-term retention and we want to make it personal, then now the across-the-board thought about what things are going to be offered for people change. And now it becomes individualistic. So for one person who's going to be driven with money, another will be driven with time, another will be driven with a particular event that they've been granted and paid for by the company, whether it's hunting, yada, yada, yada. I'm from, you know, Oregon, so hunting and fishing is a big one. Now all of the things and the tools that we apply towards retention become individualistic and personal. And I think that just goes to another level of how we care as an independent business or company for that retention.
It's like basic human. It's basic human need, right? To be understood or felt like valued or just valuable, to be recognized. And so it's like, if we're not doing that, and like you were mentioning, Craig, because each person is different, what motivates them and their why. So it's like, if we don't recognize that, or we don't take the time, or we don't care, I mean, they can tell that immediately. And it's like, we can't expect them to be bought in if we're not bought into them.
It's funny, Karen, because you and I have talked about this in the past in kind of related topics about culture. Whereas as an owner anymore nowadays, if you want to be successful, I'm sorry, but we have to. And I don't mean that by a, well, that's just a must. You're going to need to be involved and engaged personally. Yeah. And so to do that takes a lot of energy and focus, because I just did it this morning. One personal text, I mean, from Arizona up to Eugene, to my one technician who was an apprentice, to now he is basically an A-minus tech, and he's amazing. I sent him a, you know what? What you did last pay period was unbelievable. Great job. So proud of you. And it's just a text. But these things are similar to a family, and you've got to be able to engage with all of them to understand how they tick, because then they respond because you're rewarding them with how they communicate.
In that space as well, another area that I've actually witnessed some of the best shop culture I've actually experienced in areas that were very community driven were teams that actually worked as a collaborative effort, collective effort, and did community projects or community involvement things. And you could see just how much it brought their own internal structure together, and in turn helped the community see just how that relationship was going to benefit them.
And that's working together too, I think, anytime you're working for like a purpose that's collective. One thing I've noticed, it just kind of this year, it's kind of been evident, is like I've been at the shop more, but I've noticed such a different change, a shift when I'm out in the shop. Like when I'm in the shop inspecting a car, or, you know, they're inspecting a car and I'm there and I'm asking about it. It's just like, I just feel like it changes how people view me, for one thing. And I enjoy it too. I enjoy it more than being further away from them, because let's face it, we have a lot of things you have to do and manage. But the further I'm away from people, the people that are in my shop, it's like the less joy I have too. And I feel like it kind of is like that all the way around our shop.
That is so interesting. And I was just, you had me thinking about the captain of a cruise ship hanging out with the passengers.
Exactly right.
Hey, I got a great idea. Everyone knows I get inspired by these and I start writing crazy, crazy ideas. And one of them was, in a daily huddle or a weekly meeting, would you consider asking your people a question, but framed two different ways? Hey, what keeps you here? Or why you wouldn't leave? And can we learn from what they say as a team? Wow, I had no idea Charlie really values that we're buying cutting edge equipment and it's making his life more efficient. This guy appreciates lunch and learns. And you start going around the room and you start picking up issues, to your point about the generational thing, Craig, that everybody has a different need and a different want. And some people say, you know, my son's now doing soccer at 3:30, and can you all help me get there? And that's one of the things that, if that would happen, I would never leave. Those are the kind of things that I think you as an owner can react to, but I think they as a team can appreciate.
You know, you bring up a fantastic point, because what you talked about right there is flexibility. And because of what this podcast right now, this segment's about, if we as owners don't adapt, because here's the thing, I'm going to guess, but Brad and Nicole are the same way I am, which is we were brought up like you work your tail off to get where you are. Yet here's the flip of the coin. Had we taken our experiences and reflect back on them, you don't think that I would have liked to have had a conversation with my manager that said, hey, Craig, I really want you to go home and spend the next couple hours with your son, who at the time was handicapped, right? So to hear that from my boss would have been, what, huh? So we are in now, I think, a massive shift to be able to hear these people who are prioritizing. And I have to say, I admire the fact that they are prioritizing family over work, that work-life balance. What we have to do strategically as owners now is to apply what we're talking about today relative to retention, because now we have to shift to what's going to maintain productivity and what's going to help in the, on the bottom line, right? And so it's an interesting dance that we are in right now generationally, because there's a shift going on right now between where we are versus when the vocational people who are going to be coming out of that training are going to be. This next 3 to 5 years is going to be an ability for us to change that foundation to really excel through what I think is going to be a great 10 to 15 years. Got to think ahead.
Yeah.
Definitely right.
I agree. I think that this is exciting to me to talk about because I, you know, I feel it. I'm a mom. I have, they're teenagers now, kids, but, and I'm the main caregiver. I have been the main caregiver. And so I see my team members and, you know, I have flexibility in my schedule. You know, I work a lot, right? But we have flexibility. If I have an appointment I want to go to, I do it, right? But to see the stress on their faces when they have something they need to do or want to do, and they have to ask for that, you know, and you have to sometimes say no, you know. So I am passionate about this, that that's important for the upcoming generation now and in the future, but they have some flexibility. It doesn't mean minimal effort while we're here, but it just means working hard while we're here so we can have some flexibility in our schedule.
And Nicole's absolutely right. I think being able to kind of have a flexible work-life balance that works for your crew in that realm is extremely important.
And then back to us as owners, I'm going to encourage everybody who's here and listening that we have to be willing to recognize and work on ourselves as well to pay attention to the emotional cost that this will be going forward. It's going to be an emotional investment. Here's what I say to that. There's going to be a point where, oh my gosh, you guys are so awesome. You're the best boss ever until you're not. And that's got to do with our heightened set of expectations. And when that happens and all of a sudden, you know, you're deleted from Facebook or you're not part of their Instagram or whatever it may be, it can be painful because we invest in them and care for them and we want them to succeed. I mean, I want every one of my technicians to make well over 150K a year, right? But sometimes at the end of the day, when things don't align right, it can be emotionally taxing. So pace yourself and look yourself in the mirror and know that what you're doing with a glad heart, and don't expect the return. But when you get it, relish in it, because that's where the benefits from coaching come into play on the return of investment that we have emotionally for people.
That's a great point, Craig. And to add to that, I think aside from the emotional investment, there's also, in some cases, a financial investment that you really be able to understand as a business. A quick example would be as we were expanding, we actually acquired two locations that their business structure had them open on Saturdays. Our first models that we had were a Monday through Friday shop. And so there was already a weird, but also very interesting testable area to determine culture and happiness within your employee staffs between those two locations. And it was very easy to see that a Monday through Friday solution was a much better option for the entire company. And so we made changes that obviously affected the bottom line, but they were the right changes for us.
I remember speaking to a shop owner. We may have done an episode on it, and I can't remember how long ago it was. It's so much on my mind right now with our launch of our app and everything. But I just wrote these talking points down that I know I heard. Birthday cards, family, children. And when I started to think that through, I started to think about bringing work to home. And I don't mean that they're going home to work, but if the culture of the business is so strong, I mean, you talk about preventing turnover. Honey, yeah, I know you had a bad day, but God, I got that $50 gift card for my birthday. And I'm not saying you're buying loyalty. You're not buying love or anything. It's almost a caring moment. And what do you think about that?
Absolutely, it is.
It is. It's huge.
Okay, I can lend quite a bit to this in that how much does a guy really need, right? And to me, so this is the one question for an owner that would be great. Are you the one owner that likes to see how many presents you have, or do you like to see others open up Christmas presents, right? So for me, it goes beyond the birthday card. I mean, it goes everything from I'll go on and secretly find out that one of my younger techs has a $400 bill on the truck. I'll just pay it off. I'll take care of one of the guys that I've got is into four-wheel driving and things of that nature. I'll just have two tires show up. Those types of awareness things, as if they were family, go a long way. And you strategically have to do it. You keep your ear to the ground. But these investments are so powerful for them that, to Brad's point, I've had three who are now with me now long term who left and came back. It's that 6 month thing. They figure out that the grass isn't greener and it's green moss, and all of a sudden they're back.
I need Craig's juice.
It happens, though. I'm intrigued about this particular aspect of it. So full disclosure, I am in Eugene, Springfield, Oregon, 2 hours south of Portland, Oregon. If you're at all into the news or any of that, I am in Portland 2.0 in my area. One of the aspects that affect what we're talking about today is, I'm sorry, but the political nature of kind of what's going on is causing the pool that I have to pull from to actually be smaller. Carm, I briefly talked about this, but I went through a period where the last 8 months, finding people with two separate headhunters that did not work, it validated that we are doing the right thing because we hadn't had to advertise for 10 years for people, employees of all of the different positions. But it's interesting how politics has affected it too, because good conservative guys are now going, I'm out. I'm going to Texas or relocating to here or there. And it's kind of an interesting aspect of what we're dealing with. Not to get into politics, but I'm just saying it limits the pool. So we got to think about all these things. So
I know a shop owner who just lets everybody do what they need to do based on circumstance in life. The team is big enough where people, the story is this: Bobby had to go somewhere, and he had the privilege and or maybe the honor to go because that's the culture of the place. Something came up. It was critical. It was important. Well, when Joe goes on an honest to God 5-day PTO, we all pull together anyway and all the time. And that's the thing I think we're forgetting, or not forgetting, but we have to stop and realize that as PTO and vacations, which are a very big part of our benefit package and life, you know, spending that time away from work and recharging, that we survive as a business shorthanded. And being shorthanded is not bad, especially when it's this individual's. He wouldn't have this life with his family and that opportunity if he wasn't earning here.
I think another aspect to kind of talk about as well is, I think recognition and global recognition, they both go hand in hand. So to Brad's situation, right? So I have five going on, six. So here we sit and we want to be able to keep them all connected, even though they're separate locations. So in my company, so it's Sun Automotive, we have created an internal culture called the Sun Performance Team. So if you, the only way you get the swag is to be part of Sun Automotive. Number two, we have a quarterly newsletter and it's called the Sun Times. And that's when we talk about all those collective achievements, both personally and professionally within that global newsletter. The other thing is that even things such as, you take the same template for ASE and we've made it the Sun Performance Certificate in this area. And now they're rewarded relative to being recognized globally. And then also they're now, it's something to achieve. It's something personal. You can't get it anywhere else. So even though it's the same as an ASE, we've set the structure up to where it's very similar. So they get the Sun Performance certification for X, Y, and Z. And those personal types of things are going to be important as well to Brad and I's situation with multiple locations. So
that's very right. And you had mentioned even outside of the network type of accreditations, when you have a technician that possibly wins, a technician award of the year or something in that area, trying to make sure that that is as widely publicized as possible. It's certainly going to make the technician that won the award feel even better, but it also, the shop culture around them, they pay attention to that and they're trying to figure out how to get their award.
Yeah. We have something that we do at our shop, which is, I haven't had anybody that hasn't wanted this, but if they really didn't, I would respect that. But we have their picture and like a bio about how they got into the business, what they enjoy doing, their pets. We have like a whole board in our waiting room. That just like validates them. And it's funny, people that come in always read them and they just love knowing something about that individual. And even our employees will come in when there's somebody and they'll, they'll read their information, but it's not like celebrity status, but it's just, it's like, you're special and these are the things that make you who you are. Yeah. So I think like for some people, especially some people more than others, but that's important too. Just knowing that their background and what they like doing is something to be shared.
And Nicole's right. I mean, we actually tested that. I was curious how many people really would pay attention to it. So we actually set up really interesting bios for them. Where the one I remember the most, he specialized in backyard gator wrestling. That was his hobby. And you know how many people actually would read that and mention it? And it was a kind of a test thing for me, but it was like, wow, this is actually really a big idea, you know, and it was kind of fun at the same time. So.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I was just out at Brett Beachler's place in Peoria, and I spoke to the Illinois Automotive Teachers Association. I did my Rise of the Specialist speech to 140 automotive college and high school educators. It was just a phenomenal time. But Brett Beachler picked me up at the airport. He's got an unbelievable shop, family operation. You know Brett, Craig. We were hanging out, and of course, he's got the ASE certs and the picture and all that stuff in plaques for his people. And so I'm working toward the words badge of honor. You cannot go to a doctor's office. You can't go get an MRI unless you see the licensing and the certifications of not only the professional level of, be it doctoring and specialists, but the clinical people that have to pull the right levers to find out what the hell's going on inside. Those are badges of honors of people. Is it required by law that they hang there, or is it a proud moment? And if that's the culture of the clinic, to put these things up on the wall, we're proud. Why aren't we doing this stuff?
Well, it fits perfectly with your brainchild of creating the specialist culture within the shops for the technicians and advisors. So I think that that's marries well.
Anyway, I know you did, Craig. And
we ran with your platform, Carm. It was received extremely well because they really thought, wow. I said, well, you know, it's the old argument of, you know, I can remember a story when, and I think I told you this, Carm, when I was an advisor back with Ford, but, you know, I had a doctor come up and say, hey, Craig, and I had a great relationship with him. He was awesome. And so he had come up and said, you know, Craig, I know you guys got a hard job, but you got to remember, you know, we're life or death. And I happened to have a frozen brake bleeder that I was just playing with in my pocket. And I set it on the counter and I said, well, Dr. Johnson, you know, if my technician leaves this brake bleeder screw out, your whole family who's going skiing over the mountain isn't going to make it. You get the relative responsibility of your entire family on my shoulders, not just one patient. And he says to me, touche, young man. But it goes to how serious what we do every day is. And we need to pump that value up. And through whether it's recognition individually on our walls, whether it's how we talk about their title, their skill set, their value, how we're presenting that. I don't use the word sell my company, use the word present, because the health of the vehicle explains itself. But if we establish that value through all those things we're talking about, they then, we're talking about retention, they then see what you're doing to respect what they do. And I think that's what it is. They're starting to now see both monetary compensation in the market, because now they're valued. They're aware and they like being finally respected, because their path they chose is not a plan B.
These are critical. We are if someone argues with me, I'll take them on. But we are a high-tech industry.
Yes, we are.
Absolutely.
Period. Done. Case closed. We are looking for high-tech people to join a high-tech industry. No, we don't do NVIDIA chips. And no, we're not an AI think tank. And no, we don't have computers in the back room that run the rest of the world, and I need to have people run them. But we have this computer sitting on four wheels that needs technology specialists big time. And yeah, I get the mechanical part and maybe the plier here and there, but I think we're going to be less mechanical down the road, and especially if you think about NEV's needs and where that is going, and we're going to be more technical. And so the word career has to become part of your language for preventing turnover, in my mind. And instead of saying it's a job or, well, this beautiful trade that we work in, no, we're a high-tech career. And again, my passion for this language lift in the industry, I just keep bumping into people sharing with me, or me trying to think as deep as I possibly can about where this industry needs to go. And it's all umbrellaed over the word professionalism.
Absolutely.
So, Nicole, when I think about the shared values and how critically important that is to you for preventing turnover, How soon after a new hire? Any clue? Is there any barometer that you can say with as well, Carm? You know, we'll know in a couple of months if they're going to fit.
I mean, I don't want to say that because there are people that have changed that I have seen. I do think that you can see an attitude that just in my recent experience, you know, I was like, I don't know this attitude. I'm not sure if they're getting like our culture. It's that feeling inside, and you're like, you can ignore it, push it down, but then it just keeps coming back up. So I feel like my gut instinct, it usually comes true. You know, it usually comes to fruition. But we have this one individual in particular. He started as just a shop assistant, not just a shop assistant, but he started as a shop assistant last year. And he has completely changed who he is and how he views life. And just to hear him talk to clients and advise them, I mean, I'm so proud of him. So if you would have asked me last year what I thought, I would have been like, no, he's not for this career. I've been proven wrong. So I feel it works both ways.
So when I think about preventing turnover, I think about a situation that I was in many, many years ago, but I was ignoring a problem that I had. I recommend never doing that. It was a person. I was tolerating and waiting, Nicole, to your point. I think the skies will open and the beam will come down from heaven. And this person will, they'll drill a hole in his head and say, join the team. And I kept looking the other way. And I knew I shouldn't have. What happened is my senior team, five of them, came in the office, closed the door, and said, him or us, you decide.
It's interesting as you're talking about that, you know, we're talking about retention, we're talking about the hiring process. So two things happened in my head. I was listening and I'm saying to myself, I'm not sure about Brad and Nicole, but I can tell you that over the last 10 years, it's been remarkable to see how you can't get any information about a potential employee anymore. There's no one to call. The best friend isn't going to give you the right information. And so through our hiring efforts, we have to try to expose as much as we can. Goes to what you were just now bringing up, right? How do you know? What I have found is that for most cases, in most cases, you got 0 to 30 days, you're going to kind of go through the assimilation process. But that 30 to 60 is when you're going to see it, right? So one of the things that I find it really important is we have to talk about this as an ongoing foundational process. One, we have interviewing and hiring. And second, we're talking about retention, but you've got to start the expectation out right away. So one of my suggestions to people who have multiple locations are, we live and breathe literally by our mission statement and core values. So what I do is I take every single new employee and I go on what's called a tour. And we start with the location that that person is hired in, and we go to all of the other locations. When I hit the other locations, I will ask one of the staff members at the front office, hey, what is the second bullet point on our mission statement about, and why did we come up with that? And they see it not only with me as the manager's not taking me on the tour, Craig's taking me on the tour, and then I'm not explaining the mission statement, the entire team is, and at the same time, they're meeting all of the other employees at the other locations that they may never see, but now may be encouraged to pick up the phone by extension and ask them a question, who's a technician and an ATAC, about maybe a future problem. So it's about immediately setting the tone for inclusiveness for the company right from day one. I do it day one. When they start with me, I pay them 8 hours. We go on the tour, we grab a coffee, my GM's in the back seat, and we start having a culture discussion.
To kind of layer onto that, so we do have a 90-day probationary period for us, and we don't wait till the 90-day point to say yes or no, right? So through that point, we're tracking, we're paying attention to behavior patterns, whether or not they're receptive to process changes and all that. And we're scoring that information to where we can use it in probably two different opportunities before that 90-day point to first notify them of what we see and make sure we're aligned on what the strategy is moving forward. And then a progress check on that, because sometimes that could get forgotten if it's not managed from that point. So there's a lot of accountability that shows up to that 90-day point where even at 90 days, they should see it coming if they don't make it.
Without doubt. constant communication about, hey, what can we do to help you? What can we do to help you? How are you doing? How are you feeling about this? Like week one, week two, week three, week four. I mean, you're right. To Brad's point, they know.
Nicole, anything we missed on your talking points that you'd like to bring up?
It's always changing. And I think that that's just something that we have to get used to and accept, right? And I think that's what makes it fun. So I loved having this conversation. It's been awesome.
Everyone in the business is a dynamic and unique engine of their very own. And they have different cylinders and speeds and transmission ratings and fuel consumption. And
absolutely.
And you are the maestro of this room, room, room that you have to orchestrate. Well, this was great. Thank you. Preventing turnover was our topic. We went to a million different great places. You all brought some great things to light, and I'm sure the industry is really going to appreciate this. Remember, we are now the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. We have our own app. Those QR codes in the top right corner, although they're very, very small, will get you Apple or Android. But if you go to the new website, automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, man, on your smartphone, go there, click that red dot, download it to Apple or Google. You will have such a blast playing with all the episodes in the network, saving cool files, downloading stuff, making playlists out of it, and we'll never throw junk or garbage at you. It's your tool. Thank you all so, so much.
Thanks for having us, Carm.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks, Carm.
Bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive repair business podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. Get your episodic education on the ARPN listening app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com. Also, enjoy the podcast on our Carm Capriotto YouTube channel. Carm is all for advancing the professional automotive service industry. Until next time.